Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Before we get to Eric Zorn, Eric, sit tight for just a minute. Before we get to Eric Zorn, I have to congratulate Kim Gordon on two things. First of all, happy anniversary, Kim,
to you and your husband. And my wonderful cold that I have.
And your cold. I want to congratulate you on your anniversary cold.
Thank you.
And also, your Green Bay Packers played one of the most exciting NFL games I've ever seen yesterday.
Could you believe?
Heavy underdogs against the Dallas Cowboys.
Did the Cowboys even show up?
Oh, yeah, they showed up.
Oh, they showed up.
Oh, yeah.
Not in the first half.
No, but then at the very end.
Right. The first quarter was weak. Then in the second quarter, they realized this is kind of an important game. So they stepped it up. And they've got two quarterbacks. We in Chicago here, zero quarterbacks. The Dallas Cowboys
have
two.
And we only need one.
You only needed one. Aaron Rodgers.
I know. He kicks ass,
that
man.
Guy just does things
that
are otherworldly.
What could we offer
him? Well, he comes here once a year and shows us what a real quarterback looks like and then goes back to Green Bay.
We need to kidnap him.
You want to do that?
You've seen King of Comedy.
Right.
Let's do it.
Right. Ace Ventura. They kidnapped Dan Marino in that one.
You can
kidnap quarterbacks. But, boy, that game, start to finish, one of the most exciting football games.
True confessions, I have to tell you. I really do have a horrible cold. And so I was watching it laying on my couch, and I fell asleep through the third quarter, and I woke up, and I thought, oh, we have a great big lead. And there's a huge cushion. I'm just going to fall asleep. And I woke up for the fourth quarter, and I was like, oh, my God, what just happened? It was tied up. I couldn't believe it.
Yep. Every
it was
few
a
minutes.
Game.
It went down to the last second.
Yep.
It was amazing.
Yeah, what a game. So congratulations to you and Green Bay Packers fans everywhere. No one saw this coming against Dallas, but
the NFC Championship game. It's unbelievable.
Yep.
Come on now. The Bears games go down to the last second, too, of sucking.
Yeah, I guess they do. I guess they do. And with that, we welcome one of the most esteemed columnists Chicago's ever seen.
Speaking of sucking,
Eric Zorn is here.
Is that your segue? I couldn't quite tell.
I'm sorry. We should have done a better segue. Speaking of greatness, Eric Zorn is
there,
here, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you so
Speaking
much.
Of underdogs pulling it out in the last second, Eric Zorn is here, everybody. Eric, how are you? I haven't seen you in weeks. Everything good?
It's good. Yeah, you've been gone, right? You've been in undisclosed
Extended
locations.
Extended vacation.
Nice. Yeah. Things have been going well. You're off to a great start.
That's good to hear.
Well, I don't know.
You seem guarded.
I'm only, 16 days into it?
Yeah.
I'm guarded. You know, one thing I wanted to talk about this morning, I don't know if you guys have mentioned this interview that Donald Trump gave to the Washington Post.
We saved it for you.
Oh, thank you so much. Because it was really, it was a spit take moment for Republicans, I think. Because what he said, all the talks about health care, right? He's been promising to get rid of Obamacare. And he says in this interview that he wants to have insurance for everybody.
Which sounds great.
It sounds incredible. And he's going to force drug companies to negotiate directly with the government for Medicare and Medicaid. This is something
also sounds good.
It sounds great.
It's an interesting topic, and maybe you guys it might be a good time at some point soon for you guys to have a real expert on this rather than just a columnist who spouts off about it about what all that would mean to drug companies
and if it's possible.
But he says he wants universal access to health insurance. He says that he's going to have things that are. We're going to have great health care. I'm just looking for the quotes here. In much simplified form, much less expensive, and much better. Lower numbers, much lower deductibles. Now, this is the kind of thing. This is like Bernie Sanders he's talking about here. No, he does in the interview specify sort of, by the way thing. He says, I don't want single payer. Single payer is what they have, nationalized health care in Canada, UK, basically every civilized country in the world except ours.
Yeah.
He says, I want to take care of people. He's not going to cut benefits for Medicare. I mean, this is like a Democratic wish list, and it's really striking when you're seeing what he is saying here, which is that he wants to basically repeal Obamacare,
right?
But give us something. I mean, I know he's been saying this all along. No one's believed him, but he seems to actually be moving in this direction of. I mean, he says no single payer, but if you're going to have insurance for everybody, you're in a position where basically, when you look at all the options, what you have to do is you have to have some sort of a national health care plan or program.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, his people are, you know, humana, humana, humana about this because they don't really, because he, and he doesn't, of course, they ask him, what do you mean? What are you talking about? He's like, well, we'll have to wait until Tom Price is in. Now Price is
this from Tom Price Furniture?
It's Tom Price Furniture, and he's going to have these great love seats and settees. It's a terrific thing.
Is there
thing
room for
gonna,
Nicole? But, I know that's a different place,
and,
but she cracks
be,
me up.
And free furniture repair.
Oh, so, I hope
but,
so.
No, but this does sound amazing and wonderful, but how is this going to happen?
Well, because he's going to have get some sort of a bipartisan buy-in. I mean, he's going to be in a position where he's going to be promoting something that Obama couldn't even get.
Yeah.
When you're talking about negotiating for drug prices, this is something that the Obama administration had to throw overboard when they were trying to get 60 votes for Obamacare back, you know, in 2010. That this was just a bridge too far. The insurance companies the big pharma and the insurance companies, both of them are heavy, heavy donors on Capitol Hill. And you look at the polling. And one of the things that's fascinating about healthcare is that the polling on it is so dramatically in the direction of this of these kind of changes. I mean, people want the government to negotiate prices with the big drug companies for Medicare, for Medicaid, because you know there are obvious savings there. Now, of course, you know, just one of the problems that can arise is that this take if you reduce money going into the drug companies, you reduce their R&D. And you know, American drug companies, for all that they are the black hat villain in a lot of the little political dramas we have, they save a lot of lives and a lot of money. They have you know, there's some incredible things that have happened in big pharma that have really improved the quality of life, and by improving the quality of life, they've kept people out of hospitals and they've saved money. And so it's not like they're necessarily just the bad guys, or that it's a really good idea to scrape all this money back from them. It's a complicated question, but it's really a populist issue. It's really something that people love.
This isn't fair to do on the air, but Kevin, try to find this audio, please. On Friday, Paul Ryan had kind of like a town hall meeting where people just got to come and ask Paul Ryan's questions. So I don't know if you saw this
or
not.
I did see that, yes.
A man stands up, obviously in ill health, and he's very cordial to Paul Ryan. And he says, please know my history. I'm a Republican who was 100% against Obamacare. He's a small business owner. And he explains to Paul Ryan and to everybody in the room that he was so against it and thought that this was the beginning of the end for us to have Obamacare. He said, and then he was diagnosed with cancer and told that he had 6 weeks to live. And without Obamacare, he wouldn't be here anymore. And he's speaking with a very raspy tone. You can tell that it's been a very, very rough year for him. Paul Ryan handles it for the most part. You know the way politicians, even when they're cornered, he comes out of it, oh, I'm so glad you're here and I'm so glad you're alive and everything like that. And actually, to be fair to Paul Ryan, he makes mention of the fact that they're not trying to do away with it 100%. You know, one of the big concerns is if they're to repeal it, you can't leave millions of people without health care all of a sudden, because that's exactly what would happen is people would
20
start
million
just
people, yeah.
20 million people. People would just out and out die.
I think Kevin found
Did
it.
Did you find it?
Existing conditions. Let me introduce you and please get up, because I know you want to engage. Jeff Jeans is from Sedona, Arizona. He was a lifelong Republican, and then something happened. Jeff.
Come back.
That was Jake Tapper.
I was a Republican, and I worked for the Reagan and Bush campaigns. Just like you, I was opposed to the Affordable Care Act. When it was passed, I told my wife we would close our business before I complied with this law. Then, at 49, I was given 6 weeks to live with a very curable type of cancer. We offered three times the cost of my treatment, which was rejected. They required an insurance card. Thanks to the Affordable Care Act, I'm standing here today alive. Being both a small business person and someone with pre-existing conditions, I rely on the Affordable Care Act to be able to purchase my own insurance. Why would you repeal the Affordable Care Act without a replacement?
Oh, we wouldn't do that. We want to replace it with something better. First of all, I'm glad you're standing here. I mean, really, seriously. I mean,
Can I say one thing? I hate to interrupt you. Can I say one thing? I want to thank President Obama from the bottom of my heart, because I would be dead if it weren't for him.
And if you had had your way, Representative Ryan.
Well, it's a it's a very tricky subject.
Very
because
powerful.
You would have more stories like that if they just out and out, flat out said, it's done as of today. We're working on a better solution, but we're still months or a year away from
it. How can they be months away? We mentioned this last week, Wendy, if you remember. They've had 6 years.
I know.
I mean, 2010 has passed, and they started voting to repeal it in Congress.
Day one.
As soon as they could, they started saying, we want to repeal. Great editorial cartoon in today's Tribune. It shows the first one is repeal, and it shows McConnell and Ryan at the top of the steps pushing this wheelchair down the stairs. and then the next one is replace in the panel, and it shows this bloody person in a wheelchair at the bottom of the stairs, and those two guys are looking down going, somebody had to clean up that mess.
Yeah.
But if you look at, I mean, this guy is an example. When you poll people, and I looked at these numbers last week in a column, you ask people, you know, do you want people to be covered up to age 26, children covered in policies? Do you want them to eliminate copays for preventive services? Do you want them to provide subsidies for insurance for low-income people? Do you want to expand Medicaid? 80% approval ratings by people. What about prohibiting insurance companies from denying coverage based on pre-existing medical conditions? 69% approval. Same with an extra payroll tax on people with
high
income.
Why is it only 69%? Why is it not 100% of people with pre-existing conditions? You'd think everybody would be for that, 100%.
And there's so many heartbreaking stories about it. I mean, there are kids right now who are diagnosed with asthma or with lifelong conditions that are going to make them really hard to insure if insurance companies have their way. So what I'm saying is you've got this system, which is as problematic as it is, as problematic as Obamacare has got all kinds of little glitches in it. It is covering 20 million more people than were covered before, and it's got things in it that are really, really loved by the American people. Trump is saying, like, I'm going to give you everything. I'm going to keep all the things that you like about Obamacare. I'm going to get rid of the things that you don't like. The thing people don't like is the mandate, the requirement that you buy insurance. People think that that's big government. I get that. You know, no one wants to be told you got to buy something.
Can't you equate it to auto insurance? And you say to yourself, I'm sure there's plenty of people out there who go, I haven't been in an accident in 15 years. I'm not going to
wait till they need it.
Right. And then what happens?
Well, and of course, the thing about an auto accident is you are required to have liability insurance.
Sure.
Because you can cause millions of dollars in damage. You're not required to have collision. If you want to go out and wreck your $25,000 car or whatever, you can go ahead and that's your problem. But the thing is that a lot of these medical conditions are not $25,000. They're $250,000 or $2.5 million in terms of the care that is going to be needed. And it's like, I guess the idea is that we're all in it together. And, you know, you got kids who get cancer. You get people who live long, robust, healthy lives. You get guys like Bill Left. Look at him. He's a specimen.
Yep.
You know,
he picture health.
He probably never goes to the doctor. I
nope.
can't imagine he ever does.
Don't even know what the word means.
Yeah. Well,
but that's why you can decide what premiums you want to pay too. Like, we go to the doctor all the time because I'm a hypochondriac. So my deductible is lower because I need it and I pay more. My premiums went up just like everyone else's did.
Right.
But it gives you peace of mind at night if something, God forbid, should happen to you or a family member. You got it.
Right. And the language that Republicans have been using about this is universal access. They want to have systems where you could have, say, a policy that would cover you for catastrophes only. Where, you know, basically for your day, for your hype, when you go to the doctor and say, what is this growing out of my eye? They go, it's an eyelash. It's okay. You know, these things would not be covered. But if they discover, God forbid, something terrible, then you're covered.
People will blow up going to the doctor then.
That's a problem. That is a problem. And that's why, you know, the health outcomes are better in countries where they have this kind of national health services.
And a lot of cancers and other diseases, if found early, are curable. Right. You heard that guy talking to Paul Ryan. He had, what, given 6 weeks
six
to
weeks.
Live?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Was that, he didn't say, was that 5 weeks ago? Maybe. I mean, I don't know.
No, he didn't say. He didn't mention. But don't you know people, whenever Wendy and I have brought this topic up, we get calls from people who say, I'm now, thanks to Obamacare, I'm paying twice what I was paying before it was implemented. One of my best friends and his wife are paying more than double than what they used to pay.
Yep.
Their monthly payments, but they say, but we understand it. We get it. We're not happy about it, but it's a flawed system. There's no doubt about it.
There is no doubt about it. I'm not going to defend every line in that 20,000 pages of regulations that are in Obamacare. No, it's a problematic system, and fixing it is difficult.
Yeah.
The Republicans have got to come up with something now because they're basically determined. They've already set in motion last week. They set in motion basically the legislative procedure
to repeal it.
And of course, repealing it's going to be easier than replacing it. So
yeah.
It's a really interesting topic.
Eric Zorn is here. If you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're 312-981-7200. You can call us or text us there. It's Bill Left and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's us. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. And we are joined by Tribune columnist Eric Zorn. We're talking about an interview with Donald Trump that is in the current edition of the Washington Post.
He gave the interview on Saturday, and I think it ran last night online is when it first broke. But yeah, he's talking like a Democrat on health care, it sounds like. And it's a really interesting – I mean, every day is just a new adventure with
of
Trump.
Of course.
Right? His Twitter – he's now in another Twitter fight with SNL. Did you see that?
Yeah.
SNL was,
and a part of it, and I kind of understand he was mad that his sons were referred to as Beavis and Butthead, but he
better
has
than the American Psycho twins,
better than Uday and Kuse, right?
But they are being brought into it. It's not like they're just attacking someone. They're
right.
part of
the
what's going on.
Yeah, what
they're not attacking Tiffany and Barron, right? Who kind of in the background. So
it's really funny. They've almost gone out of the way. The press has to not do or say anything negative about Tiffany and Barron. There has been speculation that Barron may have some emotional difficulties. There has been speculation. There's also been a couple stories about why Donald Trump doesn't bring Tiffany more into the fold, but I think it has more to do with her age. She's just in her mid-teens or late teens, right?
I think she's a little older. Wendy's going to Google that for us. I can tell.
I
thought she was in her early
20s.
But, she's Marla Maples' kid, right?
She is, yeah.
And Marla Maples moved to California, I think raised her.
Yeah.
And so she came back every year to New York for 2 weeks. And, I'm just trying to imagine what that must have been like. Here's your dad. And he's like one of the most important men in the country.
23 years old.
Is she 23?
She looks young.
So I thought she was much younger.
I don't imagine it was a lot of great father-daughter time. I don't imagine she feels very close to him. Her speech at the convention where she said something nice about him was kind of like, when something bad happened to me, he called, a friend of mine died or something like that. He called me.
Oh.
Right. It's not like they're.
Oh, wow. Really? Like he didn't rush to her side. He gave her a call.
Oh.
Like get Tiffany on line 4.
But Donald Trump Jr. and Eric, because they're now part of what's going on, they're going to be running Trump Industries.
They're in the public eye.
They're in the public eye. So
it's not like you're just attacking the poor, innocent little kid.
Right.
They're in the biz.
You just can't, when you're a president of the United States, you can't overreact to stuff. And he overreacts to these things. What John Lewis said, did you talk about this yet?
No,
not yet.
John Lewis, the civil rights icon, he gave an interview to Meet the Press. And he gave it to them, I think, on Friday. And then it aired yesterday, but everyone knew about it on Friday. But he said basically he didn't consider Donald Trump to be a legitimate president. He wasn't going to go to the inauguration because Trump didn't get, he felt that Russians had interfered with the election. So, I don't agree with that necessarily. I mean, I think the Russians did try to interfere. I think that he did win the Electoral College vote fair and square. I don't have any real issue with that. I think it was ill-advised of John Lewis to say that. But so what?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Donald Trump just needs to, you need to have one of your spokesmen say, we honor John Lewis for his service and we disagree with him on this point. Period. End of story.
Yeah.
Stop it.
But
yeah,
then
stop
Trump
talking.
Says... Of Lewis, here's a guy who's all talk and no action, when if you know anything about Lewis's story, couldn't be less accurate. He's
arrested,
as action as action can be.
Beaten, arrested 45 times. And then he takes back of the hand at Lewis's congressional district, saying it's like basically, poor black people in the ghetto. And it's not the case. His district incorporates a bunch of downtown Atlanta. It's a robust district. And it was I thought that was really a racist remark on his part, just sort of assume, well, he's a black congressman, his district must be riven with crime
and falling apart.
Yeah,
but it's the fact that he responds to these silly skits. I mean, they're funny on Saturday Night Live, so what? You gotta say I didn't see it.
SNL from its inception, from day one, has been political and has made fun of to
everybody,
some extent
every president
they make
so
fun of.
So did he imagine that now that he's president,
Twitter
that
wasn't
that
around
stop?
Then Gerald Ford couldn't get mad at Chevy Chase for falling,
right?
And the funny thing is Stephen Colbert has been
relentless.
Yeah. And, as has Samantha Bee.
Yeah.
If you guys watch that program, she's been terrific on this.
Yeah.
John Oliver and Seth Meyers. They've all been really, really tough. But that's what you get into when you become president. You're going to get these kind of people shooting at you, and you have to just let it go. You can't respond to everything because you're going to get this from other countries. You're going to get this from people who are important leaders.
And you'll tweet about it.
And you just can't respond because you're going to start an international incident.
Right.
Yeah. And
that's so true. Thank you. Good to see you again. It's Eric Zorn. Please read him in the Chicago Tribune. You will like what you read.
Thank you. And listen to me on the Mincing Rascals, a fine podcast with a fine set of panelists.
Isn't it?
Including Steve Bertrand.
Oh, go on.
If you got Steve Bertrand, you got quality.
You got a podcast.
That's a given. That's an absolute given. Thanks again, Eric. We'll talk to Steve and find out what he has on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.